Hi, this is Keith Hall with Jazz Currents. Join me as we explore the music of trumpeter Miles Davis. In this episode of Jazz Currents, we will celebrate what would have been the 90th birthday of Miles Davis. Miles had a career that spanned over 50 years, including over 100 albums as a leader, and he was a primary voice in many of the important developments in jazz history. In our fourth episode, we listened to Miles' second great quintet, which included Wayne Shorter, Herbie Hancock, Ron Carter, and Tony Williams. The music they produced from 1965 to 1967 has forever changed jazz. We'll pick up at the end of 1967, when Miles was beginning to experiment with electric instruments, and he had done away with any sense of the swing feel. His music was now based around the rhythms of R&B music. Miles was beginning to listen to James Brown and had always loved blues artists like Muddy Waters and B.B. King. When Miles was in Chicago, he would even go down to hear Muddy Waters on Monday nights, and he was reminded of where he came from musically. The sounds of his 60s quintet were getting pretty abstract, and Miles felt he had to get back to his roots. He began recording with a series of guitar players, including Joe Beck, Bucky Pizzarelli, and then George Benson. Here's guitarist George Benson along with the quintet on Paraphernalia from the album Miles in the Sky. Miles continued experimenting with more electric instruments, and this is where we hear Ron Carter using the electric bass for the first time, on this tune called Stuff. Thank you. In 1968, Miles began recording songs for the album Feed the Kilimanjaro. This included the second quintet, as well as Chick Corea on electric piano and English bassist Dave Holland. Downbeat magazine writer John Efland called Feed the Kilimanjaro a turning point album. Efland writes, "For the first time, Miles' bebop roots were essentially severed. Rockier rhythms, electricity, and ostinato-driven bass lines now holding sway." Let's hear Corea, Holland, and Miles, along with Wayne Shorter and Tony Williams from the album Feed the Kilimanjaro. This is Frelon Brun, or The Brown Hornet. Miles continued to employ the talents of Wayne Shorter, Dave Holland, and Tony Williams, and he persisted in his experiments with electronics, recording with multiple keyboardists now, including Chick Corea, Herbie Hancock, and Joe Zawinul. John McLaughlin, an English guitarist who had come over to the States to play with Tony Williams' Lifetime Fusion Group, joined Miles in the studio as well. Much like the Kind of Blue recording session, Miles brought in sketches of tunes that were arranged in the studio and recorded in one day. Producer Tio Macero also began to experiment with editing techniques that further enhanced the arrangements. This marked the beginning of Miles' electric fusion period and was his first album to reach the U.S. Billboard Top LPs chart since My Funny Valentine in 1965. Here is the title track called In a Silent Way. Thank you. Miles was now being influenced by popular music like James Brown, Sly and the Family Stone, and Jimi Hendrix. He was also married to singer-songwriter Betty Mabry. Betty introduced Miles to many of these musicians, and she had a profound effect on his music and lifestyle. All of this seemed to work its way into Miles' new music. In 1969, Miles' working band consisted of Wayne Shorter, Chick Corea, Dave Holland, and now drummer Jack DeJohnette. Miles went back into the studio to record what would become a landmark recording, and he called in additional players like Benny Maupin on the bass clarinet, keyboardist Joe Zawinul, John McLaughlin, bassist Harvey Brooks, drummer Lenny White, and percussionists Don Elias and Jim Riley. Now, during this session, Miles told producer Tio Macero to just let the tapes run and record everything. This was a true jam session as Miles let the band play and gave direction for certain individuals to come in or lay out. Tio did quite a bit of editing after the recording. He cut and pasted sections of the music, and there were significant studio effects added that were then emulated by the band when they eventually performed it live. Out of this recording was born the groundbreaking jazz fusion album, Bitches Brew. This was Miles' first gold record, and it won a Grammy Award for Best Large Jazz Ensemble Album. From Bitches Brew, let's hear Spanish Key. In 1970, Miles Davis was riding another wave of success as he performed at the Grammy Awards, and his bands played concerts in big rock venues with the Grateful Dead, Steve Miller, and Carlos Santana. This expanded his audience immensely. He even performed at the Isle of Wight Festival in England, which was kind of a Woodstock-style festival. Miles was also asked to record the soundtrack for a documentary on the great boxer Jack Johnson. Now, Miles was a huge boxing fan, and he'd worked out regularly with a boxing trainer. He was serious. He could identify with Johnson, as they had similar interests in fast cars, jazz, and fashion. Unfortunately, the movie lacked the promotion needed for success, but Davis considers this to be his greatest fusion album. From the tribute to Jack Johnson, let's hear Steve Grossman on the soprano sax, Herbie Hancock on keyboards, John McLaughlin on guitar, bassist Michael Henderson, and drummer Billy Cobham. This is Right Off. In 1971, Miles' success continued while being named Downbeat Magazine's Jazz Man of the Year and Top Group. He released the album Big Fun, and 1 year later, he released On the Corner. Columbia Records failed to promote this album, and it did not experience the success that Miles was hoping. Although, after Herbie Hancock came out with the platinum-selling Headhunters album a year later, Columbia executives realized what Miles had been doing. Miles' new concept had been influenced by the 20th century German composer Karlheinz Stockhausen. Through Stockhausen, Miles understood music as a process of elimination and addition. He would tell his band to play a rhythm and just hold it there and not react to him. Miles wanted to be the one reacting. He was almost like the lead singer of a band. Through 1975, Miles continued to tour using a variety of personnel. But he'd been dealing with some serious health issues and decided to quit music for a while. He thought it might be for a few months and then he'd come back. But Miles didn't even pick up his horn for 4 years. He became a hermit. He was back doing all kinds of drugs and living a very hedonistic lifestyle. Eventually, Miles got bored with this, and just like he usually did with his music, he moved on to the next thing. It was actually George Butler from Columbia Records that convinced Miles to return to the music business. And in 1980, Miles began recording the album, The Man with the Horn. Among the musicians on this album were soprano saxophonist Bill Evans, guitarist Mike Stern, bassist Marcus Miller, drummer Al Foster, and Sammy Figueroa on percussion. Let's hear the rejuvenated Miles Davis on a tune called Fat Time. In 1981, Miles was ready to play in public again, and he booked a gig at the Kix Club in Boston, Massachusetts, followed up by concerts in New York City and Tokyo, Japan. The concerts were recorded and released on the Grammy-winning album, We Want Miles. Here is one of his more well-known tunes from this period called Jean-Pierre. Miles appeared as a musical guest on Saturday Night Live and then went on to record numerous albums, including Star People, Decoy, You're Under Arrest, and Aura. Miles was having difficulties with Columbia Records and decided to make the move to Warner Brothers Records. And the first album he recorded was called Tutu, written for the Nobel Peace Prize winner Bishop Desmond Tutu. This album was influenced by mid-1980s R&B and funk, along with synthesizers, sequencers, and drum machines. Bassist Marcus Miller wrote most of the music on the album, and Prince actually wrote a song for it as well. but Prince didn't think it would fit with the other tunes on the album and requested that it not be included. Let's hear the title track from the 1986 album, Tutu. In the late 80s, Miles was admiring the music of groups like Cameo and was very interested in what Prince was doing. Prince had also wanted to work with Miles and invited him to perform with him at Paisley Park for a special invite-only concert on New Year's Eve in 1987. This was the only time the two ever appeared on stage together. Miles followed up Tutu with an album called Amandla, and throughout the 80s and 90s, he made appearances on recordings for Toto, Skritti Politti, Cameo, Chaka Khan, Quincy Jones, Kenny Garrett, Easy Mo Bee, and Shirley Horn. And he received the Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award in 1990. Now, we know Miles Davis as an artist who was always moving forward. That's why his last recording in 1991 was quite unique, because this was the first time he'd actually gone back to play some of his music from the past. This very special event took place in July of 1991 at the Montreux Jazz Festival in Switzerland. The former trumpeter and in-demand pop producer, arranger, and conductor Quincy Jones assembled an all-star large ensemble to recreate some of the music Miles had pioneered with his good friend Gil Evans over 40 years earlier. The concert was a great success, and Davis fans who had resisted his later music were so happy to hear him going back to revisit this classic repertoire. Sadly, Miles Davis passed away in September of 1991 at the age of 65. From the album Miles and Quincy Live at Montreux, this is Miles Davis coming full circle with George Gershwin's Summertime. During the last five episodes, we've been celebrating what would have been the 90th birthday of the great Miles Davis. Miles began as a teenager, playing bebop with Charlie Parker, and went on to lead the way in every major stylistic change in jazz music. Miles was a great band leader, as most of the people who played in his bands also went on to be important leaders in their own right. Miles Davis has left an immeasurable imprint on jazz and contemporary music, along with catalogs of inspiring recordings and a high standard for which we can all strive. I'm Keith Hall, and Jazz Currents is produced at WMUK with support provided by the Irving S. Gilmore Foundation and the Western Michigan University School of Music. Be sure to check out WMUJazz.com for upcoming jazz events. And make sure you get out and experience some live jazz. See you soon.